Welcome everyone. Welcome to our fourth and final presentation in the Manawatū U3A's 2024 Autumn Seminar Series on Entertainment. Now, Tanya Kopitko, whom you see standing here before you, was born and raised in Palmerston North, and like her father, she is a staunch defender of the city. I used to attend Orthodox liturgies in a converted rail women's cottage in the home of Michael and Catherine Kopitko in the late 1980s, early 90s. And I remember a conversation we had there once after the liturgy when people were talking about what is the best place in New Zealand to live. I naturally defended my hometown of Christchurch, as I always would. But Michael thought Palmerston North was at the very, very heart of the country. And he made everyone laugh by saying that South Island was too far away from New Zealand. Michael came here from Belarus after the war, and Tanya has described dancing as part of her life from a very early age, when visitors came around on Sunday afternoons to share in Russian, Bulgarian, and sometimes Greek dancing. But also, Tanya belongs to a very well-established tradition of dance and musical performance in Palmerston North. She began learning ballet at the age of 7, though she found it rather more rule-bound than the dancing she experienced at home. She studied under the direction of Gwen Gibbs, who made a point of introducing new dance styles to New Zealand. And she was also taught by the formidable Evelyn Rawlings, MBE, who did much to establish musical performance in Palmerston North over 65 years. Asking questions like why do we dance and what can dance do eventually led Tanya to complete a PhD in social anthropology, investigating dance at Queen's University Belfast. She served as the Palmerston North Community Arts Advisor in the 90s, and then from 2004 to 15, she was Executive Director of the Wellington-based Dance Aotearoa New Zealand, a professional development and training organisation for dancers, choreographers, managers and promoters. And she's on the board of the Auckland-based Pacific Dance New Zealand. Returning to Palmerston North, Tanya has been involved in chair dance-based class for arthritis support, an over-50s dance class, some of you might be over 50, a class at the Manawatū Multicultural Centre, and the Palmerston North branch of Crow's Feet Dance Collective. Tanya conducts regular dance classes. Any of you go to the dance classes in Square Edge? Yes, I know what you do. Yes. And if you miss that, you can watch her on YouTube, teaching dance steps to songs like Dream a Little Dream by the Mamas and Papas. Tanya was quoted in 2021 as saying that Palmerston North has to get over the idea that it's something to cringe about. Let's just tell people how good a city it is and great things happen here. She's been doing this both through dance and the spoken and written word. And I heard her give a very interesting presentation on the Pākehātua resettlement camp during History Week earlier this year. So I know this too will be an engaging talk. Please welcome Tanya Kopitko, who's going to talk about the Regent Theatre as a palace. Well, I have a place, but it says there, palace for entertainment. Please welcome.
Thank you. Loud enough? Turned it on. We're all right now. Thank you very much for that fine introduction. And yes, I am involved in things other than dance in the city, so I'm on the Regent Trust Board. I was asked to join that soon after returning to Palmerston North, and also on the Art Collection Society Trust as well, which is aligned to Manawa Art Gallery. So I do various things. But yes, dabbling in history and writing has become very interesting to me, and in a way it's an extension of the anthropology that I did, because one good thing that you learn in the process of studying anthropology is how to research in many different ways. So I hope I'm putting it to good use. So I'm the last speaker on entertainment, and I hope I'm going to be entertaining. I thought that's the way to go, isn't it? So I'm talking about the Regent Theatre. I've lost my doodah. Here we go. And I've got lots of slides because I sort of always think that it's far more interesting to look at lots of pictures and not have to listen to people droning on. So I'll try not to drone. I like to start right at the very beginning with the Regent because I think sometimes in Palmerston North we don't know our own history, and I might not be true for you. You may well know it, but I'm just going to start with the land that the Regent sits on, and the centre of Palmerston North was all part of the land sale of 1864 between Rangatahi and the government, inviting the Europeans to come and live in the city. Now, there's a whole backstory to that, which I'm not going into because it's the region, but I just wanted to let you know that, and we're on it now, this is the land that was declared to be the where Palmerston North was going to be, because Rangatahi didn't live here specifically, they lived more down towards the river. Okay, there we go. And so by 1878, there's our square. Doesn't it look fantastic? So there you are, standing at the top of Fitzherbert Avenue looking. So if you go down that way, it would be the Regent, wouldn't it? That would be the street. Yeah, you've got the general gist of it here. Okay, so that street was actually Broad Street. It wasn't Broadway as it is now. Yeah, and one of the first buildings that was built on the Regent would be here, but of course it wasn't the Regent then, it was the Post Office Hotel. So there was another post office that was further down the road, not the one that's the old post office that we know on the square. So there's the Post Office Hotel, and it's got Bates written on the side of it. You just saw that. Okay, cool. And anyhow, you can see that there are some hoardings. There's a doodah, isn't there? I can do that. Look, there's some hoardings there. And on those hoardings, you can see Collingham. It's Collinson and Cunningham's owned that land. Yeah? And the reason I'm showing you that is that that land was used for travelling circuses. So on that land was jugglers and performing horses and dogs and the three Dunbars flying trapeze and the occasional elephant. So before the Regent was built, I guess I'm saying that land was a space for entertainment. So the hotel burnt down. And in 1926, and J.C. Williamson's bought the land from the owners of the Post Office Hotel and Collinson and Cunningham's. And we know that because just last year a box of interesting papers was found, given into Tumanawa from a descendant of the Collinson and Cunningham's family, and it has the deed of sale between J.C. Williamson's and those two companies. So the theatre was built in 1929 primarily for movies and some stage performances. So J.C. Williamson's in the 1900s was one of the largest theatrical companies, not just in Australasia, because that's where it started, but in the world. They owned and leased theatres, and they were producers and agents of shows. So they had two arms, the ownership and management of theatres, and the leasing of theatres and the building of theatres, which you would think is enough of a business. But no, the other arm was having a production company which toured shows. So in all, they built 23 theatres in New Zealand and hundreds in Australia, the big famous ones being Melbourne and Sydney. Yeah, only a few now are remaining. Now, J.C. Williamson himself was an actor born in America in Pennsylvania, and he travelled to Australia in 1888 with his actress wife, Maggie Moore, and evidently they were very good, and they had a troupe, and they toured Australia, and they were immensely popular. And so he decided to stay on in Australia, and he built his theatrical empire. He became Australia's most foremost impresario. And he founded the J.C. Williamson Theatrical and Production Company. And basically he leased theatres, as I said, and built theatres. He brought famous performers to Australia and was known for his spectacular large-scale productions. So he toured people like Anna Pavlova, Nellie Melba, Sarah Bernhardt, the Doyley Cart Opera. He toured shows from London's West End. So he was a very, very successful man. In 1907, he shifted to Europe, and he put the company in the hands of very competent theatrical managers. And the company name remained, even though it was managed by other people. And George Tallis became the manager of the J.C. Williamson Company, and then the Tate family. The Tate family comprised of five brothers, and they had all learnt their skills by working with Mr. Williamson. So he basically trained up his own staff to be highly competent. And it was the Tates who managed the Regent it was the Tates who managed J.C. Williamson's when our Regent Theatre was built. The architect for our Regent was Charles Neville Holinshed. And he was born in England, but he had a New Zealand mother from Nelson. And I haven't worked out what the connection is there, but she obviously had gone to the UK because she married an English fellow who was a draper, I think. And in 1901, that family, the Holinsheds, shifted to Brisbane. And so Charles was brought up in Australia, although he did serve in the Air Force during the war. But he started training in architecture. And then when he went back to Australia, he continued to train in architecture. And he then married the daughter of the Tate family. And so that put him in close contact with J.C. Williamson, who of course were building theatres and doing all sorts of things like that. So through this connection, he became a theatre architect. And he was famous for his Australian designs of theatres. He was a big deal because he is known as a renowned Australian designer and is in their Architecture Hall of Fame. So our designer of our Regent was, an important person. And he designed the Regent Theatre in Palmerston North and in Masterton. At this stage, I don't know if he designed any more, but we know that he designed those. So J.C. Williamson built the theatre in 1929. And look there, it was completed in 1930 and it cost £46,000. It became the largest and the most lavish auditorium in the city, and it has retained its twin function for most of its life, showing movies and showing shows. And there's its lovely 1930 interior, which if you were in there now instead of here, you'd be able to stand there and compare that photograph with what exists now. But the major changes are that those two booking... things have gone, and you've got the entrance to the new Friends Bar on that side, and you've got the current booking office where you walk through on that side. Yeah? Cool. Right, and that's what it looked like then. Lots of modern cars, yeah? But you can see that it was quite a major construction in Broadway, yeah? At the time. But that's not the only theatre that we had in town, of course. We had the Opera House, which in fact was built in 1905 as a performing venue. And now we've got another performing venue, although this one is also for the movies. I might also say at this, at this stage that the Regent was built in the 1930s. Was built in the 1930s when, of course, it was the Depression in New Zealand. And it gave jobs to local men and trained them. I mean, they were grateful for the income, but it was also an opportunity to learn skills. Because you can imagine that building the inside of a theatre is very intricate work. J.C. Williamson's did send craftsmen over from Australia because they used Italian craftsmen to do plaster work and such like. And they came and they taught skills here. And also you have to realise that at that stage they would have, designs that could be reused. So some of the plaster designs would have come over from Australia as well. They weren't all necessarily original. And somebody told us on one of the tours that we gave of the region, she lives down Church Street in an old house down there, and evidently it's got an extremely ornate plaster ceiling. And she was told that, that those plaster ceilings down Church Street were made by some of the craftsmen that built the Regent. Because they were quite keen to do extra work on the weekend. So I haven't been into any of those houses, but if you know them, apparently they've got very beautiful ceilings, and that could have been their origin. Okay, so there was one craftsman, the foreman, Gus van Dongen, and evidently it's well written in the newspaper in that he was a wonderful foreman for the project. He was a Dutch immigrant that came to New Zealand, and he had worked on all sorts of buildings across the country, race courses, you know, quite large buildings, and he had a very, very good reputation. And evidently his management of the workers at the Regent was so good that the workers themselves saved up and gave him a fine gift and citation, which he was given at the railway station here in Palmerston North when he left. So all in all, it was a happy occasion, the whole process of the building of the Regent. The Regent Theatre opened on the 4th of July 1930 at 7:45 p.m. And it was a brilliant spectacle. Let's say that what was written in the paper, several pages, is an entertainment in itself. Because in those days they wrote a lot more than we do now in the press. The beautiful edifice of the new Regent Theatre presented an animated scene last night when the doors were thrown open for the first time. The occasion marked an epoch in the theatre history of Palmerston North and the consummation of many months of feverish activity. Spelling mistake in there. Hundreds congregated outside the building early in the evening, and when the doors were open, the throng extended across the road to the opposite footpath. Every seat was filled and latecomers were disappointed. And then they went on with the description that the crowd was delighted with the galaxy of lights that gleamed on the facade, the subdued golden atmosphere of the foyer with its huge mirrors, and the rich comfort of the mezzanine promenade where palms and mossy banks of flowers were arranged and created a pleasant sense of anticipation. And so it went on. The art and beauty, the blaze of colour, etc., etc. So they got quite excited about it. So what did they do? They had loads of speeches and then they showed a movie. And it happened to be this one, The Love Parade, which was Maurice Chevalier and Jeanette MacDonald. And it was one of the first talkie movies that was made by Ernst Lubitsch. So we are talking about early talkie movies as well, which is quite interesting. It was, I thought, a very strange choice, but there you go. Jeanette MacDonald was a well-known American actress, and it went down very well. Innuendo and satiric romance, but there you go. There it is, the opening movie, The Love Parade. That's what they wore then. Yeah. But, of course, we have an opera house, don't we? So what was going on there? So meanwhile at the opera house, orchestral society, yes, saxophones, banjos, soprano from Danny Burke, and somewhere in there I think there was also a poi artist. So there you go, plenty going on at the opera house. But they didn't really compete with each other, because here's J.C. Williamson owning the region, putting movies on, and here on the 2nd of August, very soon after the opening, is J.C. Williamson's season in the Opera House. He's dominating everything, this fellow, yeah? So in this one, he's got his opera, yes. London Gaiety Theatre musical comedy, Love Lies and So This Is Love. So this is, as David says now, the current manager of the Regent, David Walsh, he said this is not unusual. Theatrical agents such as J.C. Williamson's or Robert Kerridge, who came later, do not want to disrupt their own business. So they're quite happy to have movies running in one venue and hire other venues for their touring shows. So it's quite within keeping. In terms of J.C. Williamson's, yes, he did also run variety shows there and operettas, and touring companies were toured at the Regent, not just films. And some of our first Palmerston North dance teachers were in fact ex-J.C. Williamson dancers. So Cecily Tabor, who was one of our first New Zealand, first Palmerston North dance teachers, was a J.C. Williamson dancing woman. Okay. What else went on? August the 30th, we're talking entertainment. It's glorifying the American Girl. But at the same time, at the Opera House, showing the diversity of what used to be on in those days, following the musical theatre, we've got Palmerston North Wrestling Association match between Tom Ray of Nebraska and Carla Pasha, aka the Terrible Turk, or the Turkish Wonder. So this is on at the Regent, and at the Opera House you've got wrestling. So, again, lots of extravagant reviews at the time. Lots of films that had Gene Kelly and Ray Bolger and Julie Garland and such like. Okay, I'm going to go a little bit off-piste now, because I found the war years quite intriguing. And I thought, well, yes, I could look at what happened at the Regent during the war, but other things were happening in town as well. So during the war, there was a lot of fundraising for the war effort. And you can see here patriotic concerts, yes? And the interesting thing is that soldiers with a lady friend could come free. Yes, but the rest all had to pay because you were raising money for the war effort, yeah? So that just gives you a snapshot of what was going on. So this is going on around the area, yeah? So here you are, you've got the Cosy Club and the Mayfair Orchestra, you've got the PDC Ballroom there, you've got the Awapuni Hall there. Yeah, and down here, Bulls. So lots and lots of activity during the war. And I thought I'd bring this one up because I started right at the beginning with our history, which was the land settlement between Rangatane and the government. And here we have Billy Larkin and his dance band. And I don't know whether you realise, but Billy Larkin was also Wurumu Kingi Te Awiawi, who was the grandfather of our current kaumātua, Wurumu Te Awiawi. And He had a band, and Wirimu, you may know, is also a musician and also a regional councillor as well, but he's known for his music skills. And like his grandfather, he plays in bands, the most known being Charisma. Okay, whoopsie, what happened there? There you go. So meanwhile, all this activity is happening in the region for the war, and what sort of movies is the region showing? War movies, of course. And we had lots of celebrations going on in the square, the Victory Day celebrations. And what was going on at the Regent? An Hour of Charm all-girls orchestra film. Yes, so there was a lot of escapism as well, wasn't there? That's what I would call that. Okay, we move on in history. The sale of the Regent. So Sir Robert Kerridge comes now to the picture in 1946. So up until now, they built the Regent, it opened in 1930, and here in 1946 it's being sold to Robert Kerridge. And that is because there continued to be economic difficulties with J.C. Williamson's, especially, I guess, as they were such a large company. They had their fingers in so many different pies, and so what they did is they decided to streamline some of their economic activities, and so selling off some of the theatres was what they did. So Robert Kerridge purchased the Regent, managing director of Kerridge Odeon, and he was also a New Zealand theatrical agent and promoter, as well as a cinema chain manager. So the dual roles of the Opera House and the Regent continued through sometimes international acts toured by Kerridge. So they would be performed at the Regent or at the Opera House. Robert Kerridge started buying theatres from 1926. And by 1946, he owned 133 cinemas in New Zealand. He was an entrepreneurial businessman with wide interests, not just the theatre. So he organised concert tours by overseas stars such as the Beatles, the Bolshoi Ballet and pianist Julius Katchen, but he vigorously promoted New Zealand's tourism industry. And Kerridge Odeon built the White Heron Lodge in Parnell, the Pakatoa Island Resort, you may have heard of that, in Hauraki Gulf. And he introduced the first hydrofoil on the Waitemata Harbour. He also financed retail developments such as the 246 Shopping Centre in Queen Street, which opened in 64. So he was a very much an entrepreneurial man, not just theatre. And but he did tour a number of very important international acts, and I found one photo of the Vienna Boys Choir, who were here several times, but I think that was their first visit. Yes, so he had various shows that came in, as well as the movies running at the Regent. And David Walsh, who worked for Kerridge Odeon and Pacer Kerridge, he's our current manager at the Regent, he recalls various professional touring performances that happened at the Regent and the Opera House during the 70s and the 80s. In the late 70s, Harry Secombe performed to a fully booked Regent Theatre and no microphone was needed. His voice soared to the back of the theatre, and at that time the Regent had 1,600 seats. Another agent, Harry Miller, toured Jesus Christ Superstar, starring John English and Marcia Hines. And here, that was performed at the Regent, and David said here is remembered for the protests outside due to the nudity in the show. David recalls the 1980s performance at the Regent of Motorhead, which was considered hard rock at the time. There was a stabbing and damage done to the Regent Theatre. David called Kerridge in Auckland to inform him of what had happened and that he didn't want that sort of show coming to the Regent again. The reply was, but look at the income it brought in, much more than a movie. And the promoter will have to pay for the damage. A memorable act that David Walsh remembers in 1980 was one that never happened, the Pointer Sisters. The audience was left waiting for 20 minutes until the promoter came on stage to say that one of the singers was sick and couldn't perform, but David said she was actually drunk. Okay, so it carried on as a theatre and, as a cinema mainly, and in the 60s sometimes it was painted white. And you may remember Val Page is a very popular manager of the theatre during that period. So by that time, and he was a colourful character, and so there were lots of stories, but he was known for his cats, and that's Smokey, which is one of the more famous of the cats. And he was a great marketer of movies, and it was him, we feel, that spun the story that the Regent has got a ghost. And when you start doing your research, you find that, interestingly, the story of the ghost seemed to pop up at the same time he was marketing a film called Casper the Friendly Ghost. Before that, no one knew about any ghost, but apparently it was an elderly lady who wore a purple coat and a fur hat. And he swore that, you know, this happened. Well, things went wobbly. We're talking about now the market crash of 1987. Changes in hotel drinking hours. So previously hotels closed at 6. Now people are going out for longer. The start of TV in New Zealand from the 1st of June 1960 slowly gathered its impact on people going to the movies. And people wanted modern cinemas. The theatre was looking run down at this stage. And it didn't help that it was looking shabby and there was a particular smell of cat around the place as well. Anyhow, what happened was that it looked very much like everything was going to go to custard. The Kerridge Odeon went into liquidation, and there was a possibility under their liquidation that the theatre would be demolished by them just to sell the land and, you know, get out of things. And at the same time, the Palmerston North Opera House in Church Street, where Farmers is now, developed a crack in a major beam, stage beam, which was seen as a significant safety problem. It might have been luck. So anyhow, what happened was that not knowing what was going to happen to the Regent, hearing that the Opera House was in trouble, a Regent Action Group, or RAG, was formed by people concerned about the future of the building. And it was started by a fellow called Brent Lovelock, who's now a senior lecturer and head of department at Canterbury University. And his area of expertise and interest is environment, but obviously architectural environment as well. And he pulled a small committee together in the first instance, and then that developed over time. But my husband and I were both on the Regent Action Group at that time. I was the community arts advisor for the city, and so the Community Arts Council asked that I go on there to see what we could do to keep going. And so they created the Save the Regent campaign, which ran from 1989. We gathered 6,000 signatures, and started really raising consciousness about the Regent. So there were all sorts of tours. The public were asked to come in and write down their memories of the Regent. Was the Regent important to them? People wrote down all sorts of wonderful things, like what seats they always used to sit in and that sort of thing. And so it was quite clear that there was a lot of public support for the Regent to remain. We didn't know But there were some complications in the process of negotiating the region. So there were still people who liked the Opera House and believed that the cracked beam could be solved. There were people who wanted the region saved and retained. And we didn't know until this year from a staff member of the City Council that they had another idea, that they might purchase the land where Harvey Norman is now and build a new fit-for-purpose auditorium, and so the Regent and the Opera House could go. So thanks to, I think, the action of people and doing some really crazy things, like getting the circus when it came to town to bring the elephant in and getting loads and loads and loads of publicity, I think the council were really pushed to, listen to this action group. And in the end, the money raised was the equivalent of $25 for every adult and child in Palmerston North. So that's how much the public here wanted the region saved. And there's a maniac. Look at him, isn't he gorgeous? And of course it stopped things down Broadway and the press were there in no time. That's exactly what you want, isn't it? So the Regent, in 1993, the City Council purchased the Regent for future use as an auditorium. The Regent closed in 91 and a trust was formed, and it was made up of members from the Regent Action Group, people with theatre interests in Palmerston North. I mean, if you've got people at the Opera House who thought the Opera House should still remain, then you need to incorporate them. So they were invited onto that board, and also city councillors. And that trust basically was there to plan for the future of the Regent. The trust raised $1.7 million from local people. So there was a fundraising campaign, and they thought that the bulk of that money would come from businesses. But no, indeed it never did. The businesses were slow, and it was actually the public that paid that amount of money. Just showed you their determination. And it was Susan McConaughey who did a lot of the fundraising for the Trust Board. She did that in a voluntary capacity. The people of Palmerston North were then consulted by the Trust Board on what they wanted in this renovated theatre. Did they want a mini, a midi, or a maxi version of the theatre? In other words, how much money or what standard did they want it renovated to? And the public response was overwhelmingly for the maxi. Restore it to the highest quality. The work was carried out between 1996 and 1998, and that meant cleaning, repairing, renovating, and building. So you can see there's the fly tower. So it extended and upgraded the backstage area. So from the proscenium arch, when you're in the theatre and you're sitting down, you're looking at the stage, and that frame for the stage is the proscenium arch. So everything before that, the stage, the side of the stage, the backstage and up, is all new. But everything this way of it, when you come into the foyer and that, is original work. So it's not repainted, as some school teacher was sure that it had all been repainted and they'd found designs. And no, it's original. And they spent a lot of time cleaning it because it was full of blackness from cigarette smoke. And as David said, people were never allowed to smoke in the theatre. But because people smoked in the foyer and hot air rises, it got sucked in, and over time the ceilings became filthy. But if you go in there now and look at the colour of it, that is the original colour, and it's just cleaned. It's not repainted. So it's pretty amazing. But there, as I said, there was repairing and renovating. So during the Kirajonian ownership period, as well as the building being painted white on the outside, which was over a special sandstone look that had been deliberately put on the building, so that all had to be removed, and removed very carefully, because we're talking about the renovation of a historic building. But inside, people had done interesting decorations. So when you go up to the mezzanine floor, you will see that the pillars look like that, but some of them look like that, and it was thick paint that was put on there. So you can imagine the hard work trying to remove that and get it back to its original. And then, as I said, from the proscenium arch back, it had to be new stuff had to be put in. So here they are digging in an orchestra pit, and to their horror, they found that the regent was actually sitting on level ground. There was no drainage underneath it. So they had to dig down into that ground here to build an orchestra pit and put in drainage, because of course Palmerston North's a swamp. So a lot of work in there. And that allows now for the stage to go up and down, which it can do. So this is an example of some of the beautiful work in the region which already existed. So once again, there was some people on the tour that said, oh yes, but that would have been put in recently, because it's a Māori design. No wrong. In the 30s, Māori designs were being incorporated in architecture and design. So if you look at Massey, the old buildings at Massey, the refractory, there's some beautiful kōwhaiwhai designs around that. And if you look at the old police station in Church Street, around the door, you will see Māori designs. I've asked Warren Warbrick and he said that it's probably from a book of designs, because architects were interested in that sort of thing. However, having said that, I pushed him a bit further, and he said that the designs there are fairly standard, but one of them is the Mangol Tipi relating to sharks, and the Pōhoro design relating to fast movement through water. So with a bit of poetic license, I would say that you could interpret the symbols generally as saying the regent will move forward with strength, a wonderful symbol for arts and theatre. Yeah, that's just my imagination, all right? But you would see that up in the mezzanine floor. Yeah, that's where they are. And so we're getting to the opening. The 28th of April, just looking at my time, was the blessing to protect the theatre, and then there was a huge opening, two weeks of celebrations, which is absolutely fantastic. There were inside the theatre, outside the theatre, a big festival, and then ever since then we've marked key events for the region, key milestones. So the 75th anniversary since the 1930 opening was Madame. Celebrating 20 years since the saving, Michael Houston. This last year, 2023, 25 years since saving the Regent, and we had Orcartia, which was a remarkable local production with Kane Parsons. So, just really finishing up now, Regent and entertainment, what do we do now? The Regent is a multi-use venue, Kapa Haka, Pacifica Festival, local and national performing arts, graduations, school shows, comedy, conferences, commercial and professional performances. That one there is World on Stage. Yeah? Some statistics that you might find interesting. The Regent on Broadway today, 80% of the events that are held at the Regent are community performances. And they produce, however, 20% of the hireage of the Regent is commercial and professional, but they produce 77% of the income. So if we had to rely only on community for our income, we wouldn't exist. There's no way that the council would subsidise the place. So the balance of community and commercial professional programming is absolutely crucial for the survival of the region. And so you have to have a very, very knowledgeable and clever manager who knows how to wrangle, who has contacts for agents in New Zealand and internationally, who keeps all those contacts hot and alive and also can work with community and keep them all happy. I mean, you can imagine through COVID, it wasn't an easy time. Schools pulled out that year and they were nervous to come back to a big auditorium like that. So it's assurances and things like that. You may know also that during COVID, we managed to run one show with dividing the auditorium. And we were the only theatre in New Zealand that could do that, and that was only possible because the Regent's toilets allowed those four sectors to be separated. So other theatres got excited when they saw it and thought they could do it too, but because their toilet arrangements weren't as good as ours, they couldn't. So the basis of it all, unlike Centrepoint, who are a programming theatre, the Regent is a theatre for hire. Okay, there is a big difference there. Groups approach the Regent to hire it to put on shows. Agents approach the Regent to hire it to put on shows. But at the same time, the manager has to have his fingers in all the pies to make sure the agents remember that the Regent is there and could be on a tour. And at the same time, he needs to be able to juggle the bookings for it to work. And sometimes we miss out on things. So, for example, we had Matilda at the Regent recently, which was very, very popular. But they're booked in, and then suddenly 660, very popular New Zealand group, wanted to hire the Regent for their show. But unfortunately, in that instance, David couldn't massage the end of Matilda and get them in. So unfortunately, we lost them to Whanganui. And that's what happens sometimes. Sometimes he can negotiate and fit it in, and sometimes it just purely doesn't work because of the logistics of all the stuff that has to be shifted out. And when I'm talking about programming, I'm talking about years ahead. He'll have people booked for 2 years, 3 years ahead. It's not something that people book just quickly. So when the Royal New Zealand Ballet come, they've already booked next year. We know all the dates that they're coming in. Maybe even the year after. So it's, and then also because of knowledge, he knows that schools are likely to be booking in this period, and this is likely to be happening in that period. The Regent today is now called the Regent on Broadway. You can see that they removed the white paint and they had to put it back to its original. A superb performing arts venue, and I would like to finish by saying that there we are with the Friends of the Regent, Ushers. So we're a very unique theatre in New Zealand in that we have the Friends of the Regent who do a lot of voluntary work as ushers and manning the bar and everything like that. And when I hire the Regent as a community person or a commercial person hires the Regent, there is a fee for the ushering and such like in the contract, and then that fee that the ushers will get, the Friends of the Regent will get, is kindly given to the Regent in order that the Regent can purchase things like sound desks and new ropes that cost $150,000. That had to be imported from Germany, you know. Things are not cheap in a theatre. So we do get a city council subsidy, but we do a lot of fundraising internally because of the Friends of the Regent, going to grants, and also just managing it financially really well. That's it. Okay. So it's skilled work running something like the Regent. But it's got a fascinating history and a wonderful ambience, and I hope after this presentation, the next time you go to the Regent, you can look at it and think, oh, yeah, okay. okay, that'll be that plaster work, and I wonder if an Italian did that. It is, it's wonderful. So there you are, a little bit after three, but that's me done.